Ranked number one in innovation 10 consecutive years, Arizona State University isn't just ahead of the curve. It's creating new paths to success. Learn from notable clinical and research faculty. Online, that's a degree better. Explore programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
Looking to transform your business through better HR and payroll? Meet Paycor, the powerhouse solution that empowers leaders to drive results. From recruiting and development to payroll and analytics, Paycor connects you with the people, data, and expertise you need to succeed. Their innovative platform helps you make smarter decisions about your most valuable asset, your people. Ready to become a better leader? Visit paycor.com/leaders to learn more. That's paycor.com/leaders.
How'd you like to listen to .NET Rocks with no ads? Easy. Become a patron. For just $5 a month, you get access to a private RSS feed where all the shows have no ads. $20 a month will get you that and a special .NET Rocks patron mug. Sign up now at patreon.dotnetrocks.com.
Hey, guess what? It's .NET Rocks all over again. I'm Carl Franklin.
And I'm Richard Campbell.
And Richard, you're still in Canada, eh?
Yeah, yeah. It's nice here.
Yeah, cool. That's all I'm going to say about that. We love Canada. Before we get into Better Know Framework, let's just talk a little bit about 1940, kind of an important year.
Episode 1940.
So the year 1940 saw the beginning of World War II's escalation anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The signing of the Selective Training and Service Act, which established the first peacetime draft in the U.S., and the release of Disney's animated film Fantasia.
Nice.
Additionally, the U.S. made agreements to transfer destroyers to Great Britain in exchange for military base leases.
As you do.
You have anything to add? I mean, a lot of stuff happened in 1940. A
lot of stuff happened, but, you know, my personal favorite would be the Jeep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The U.S. realized it needed a lightweight recon vehicle, something that could be all terrain, and they put out bids basically to car companies in the U.S. Everybody scrambled around. It's a crazy story that this little car company called the Bantam Motor Car Company in Pennsylvania hired a guy from Detroit named Carl Probst, who in a week basically designed that, the prototype of the Jeep.
That's longer than it took them to create JavaScript. Which I believe was in a weekend.
This was a car. Anyway, yeah, the beginning of the Jeep comes with part of World War II.
And, you know, I know this little factoid about Jeep. I don't remember the character's name, but there was a character on the cartoon Popeye.
Right.
That's related to the Jeep. And it was a character. All right. I'm going to have to, since you got
Eugene the Jeep.
Yeah, that's it. Eugene the Jeep. And it was, all right. I don't know as much as
who said Jeep, Jeep.
Yeah, he used to say Jeep, Jeep, Jeep. Yeah, yeah.
A little yellow, weird yellow critter.
I'm one of them started the other. Like, it might have been that critter that named the Jeep, or it might have been the Jeep that inspired the cartoon character. I can't remember which it is, but
yeah, Jeep was a perversion of an acronym for a general purpose vehicle.
Oh, okay. So Richard comes through with the facts.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get into Better Know Framework. This is a good one. Roll the music.
All right, dude, what do you got?
This is an article in The Verge. There's lots of articles around it, but this is where I learned about a new way of capturing 3D content called Gaussian splatting.
Because we always trust a technology called splatting.
Splatting, yes. So the whole idea between Gaussian splatting is rather than, let me see if I can just sort of, you know, nail it down.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is instead of doing sort of vectorizing and turning things into triangles, and the more triangles you have, the better resolution you have. This sort of creates, you know what Gaussian blurring is, right?
Yeah.
So it creates these sort of blurry things that compound on top of each other and make up a more realistic looking 3D image. But here's the cool part about splatting is that you can do it in real time.
Hmm.
It can render in real time at 100 frames a second. Or
computationally efficient would be a way to say it, as well as being small.
Very computationally efficient. Yeah. So I can see this coming to all the major tools. There are tools that you can use now, but they're sort of add-ins, and it'll become more mainstream. But I think it's really, really cool. It's going to make for some amazing games and some amazing 3D experiences. Just the whole idea of going out with a camera, taking some video or taking pictures, and then stitching them together and creating a 3D model of that. Now that can be pretty much in real time.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Very cool.
We're getting to, you know, what's cool is like we've been able to do this, just computationally intensive. This is clever tricks.
Yep.
To reduce the number of bits that need to be hauled around to get the same similar results anyway. Maybe
not. Exactly. So I think it's a kind of a breakthrough. So that's what I got.
Cool.
Who's talking to us today, Richard?
Grabbed a comment off of show 1935 just a few weeks ago. We talked to Nathan Westfall about his app that the mobile app he was working on that migrated from Xamarin Farms to Blazor. Mm. This comment for Rob King I thought was relevant to what we were talking about today, where he says, I've been doing small stuff in Blazor since .NET 5 in late 2023. We had the opportunity to build a greenfield app with a tight deadline. While Nathan's app sounds a bit more complex than ours, a lot of his reasons and decisions around Blazor resonated with our thoughts and considerations. I built Blazor using all the hosting models, but I still default to WASM for its clean separation of client-server responsibilities. If I can do everything in the browser that React and Angular can do, but can write it in the same language as a backend, why would I choose anything else?
Why would you?
Well, and the argument for React, of course, is if I can write everything in JavaScript front-end and back-end, why would I choose anything else?
Absolutely. I guess it all depends on what your skill set is. And
yeah.
You know.
And what's your language of choice? What's your tool suite? How are you happy?
Absolutely.
So, Rob, thank you so much for your comment. And the copy of Music Co-Buy is on its way to you. And if you'd like a copy of Music Co-Buy, write a comment on the website at .netrocks.com or on the Facebooks. We publish every show there. And if you comment there and I read it in the show, we'll send you a copy of Music Co.
Music to Code By has a new episode track, I guess we call them. Let me say that again.
Yeah, the tracks, right?
Music Code By has a new track number 22. You can go get it or download the whole thing as MP3s, waves, or FLAX. And that is FLAX. At musictocodeby.net. FLAX.
Awesome.
Not a half-FLAX. FLAX. So, and you can also find us on the social medias, which include X, Twitter, Mastodon, and Blue Sky, and we're some version of at Carl Franklin and at Rich Campbell, okay?
Yep, across them all.
So let's bring back Aurora Scharf. She was Aurora Wahlberg last time we talked. She's a software developer and Microsoft MVP from Norway. Aurora began her career at a financial technology startup and now serves as consultant at Crayon Consulting. She focuses on web development and has extensive expertise in React and Next.js and active use of React server components. She shares her knowledge through workshops, technical blog posts, social media, demo apps, and supporting fellow developers. And she regularly presents internationally at recognized conferences to contribute to the global developer community. Welcome back, Aurora.
Hi. Thank you for having me back. Good to see you guys again.
That's normally where we hang out, is at the various conferences we both appear in.
Oh, it was so much fun last time, and you've got some new stuff to talk about, so why not?
Yeah, last time I was at NDC Portal, and it's different now. We're doing it online, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Try it this way as well.
And amazingly, everything's working today.
Don't jinx it.
So far. Hey.
I know lately Riverside has been kind of hostile towards people who want to use it.
Yeah.
As in, you can't use your microphone
or
your camera. What are you, crazy?
Yeah. So it's funny how just stuff that works suddenly gets crankier.
Yeah.
So what's up with React these days, Aurora?
Lots. When I was with you guys last year, or it was actually, was it 2020?
I think it was 23.
Yeah. End of 2023. The whole server component thing was pretty new, but since then React 19 is released. We have lots of progression in frameworks that are using server components. So yeah, it's a lot more stable and developed now. definitely.
Nice. Yeah. So it's grown up a bit.
Yeah.
And we're on the 19th version of React. That was quick.
Yep. Yep. Was it? I think it's been 4 years since the 18, if I'm not mistaken, with hooks.
Okay.
So actually, it's been a very long time.
Mm. Well, and I like when you're getting that mature, it should slow down, right? Like, I've been kind of disturbed at how quickly Angular has been cranking out a version or two a year. Just seems like a bit much if you're living in that ecosystem.
Especially if they're breaking changes.
Yeah.
What I did take a look at React for a while, and what I liked about it was the sort of the fluent composition of it. And it seemed pretty simple to create React components.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you know anything about JavaScript, it felt very comfortable.
Definitely.
What are some of your favorite features?
I love JSX. I think it feels like you're just flowing through the development process and creating components that you can use across each other, inside each other, pass props. I don't know. It feels like a very natural model to me for building maintainable apps.
So what's JSX?
It's the templating language that is used in React. So that's what lets you do your conditional rendering like straight inside your HTML.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you can basically create markup like you would create a JavaScript variable, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. It's really great. And JSX, I mean, that's been used as a template for a lot of other frameworks, like, for example, Astro, which is a different framework, is using their own sort of JSX. So clearly people like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, people have always really liked being able to blend markup and code together in easy ways, you know, and sometimes not so easy ways. Like, I don't know if you remember the first ASP, Active Server Pages, where it was... Yeah, you could have mostly markup with a little code. You could have mostly code with a little markup. You could mix and match. And, you know, it was a big mess.
yeah, it always felt like write-only stuff. Like, this stuff's easy to crank out, but boy, it's tough to debug or come
absolutely
back to.
Horrible to debug. Yeah. So what's the debugging situation with React, and what tools do you use to do that?
I mean, it's always console log for me. I don't know. I think this is like it varies from person to person, but for me still.
You're so old school.
Console log is great. And there's some div tools.
How many times have you written console log? Got here.
I usually log something that's not explaining enough, and then I have to go and add it later. So that's my problem.
Yeah. Got here is one thing. Should never get here is another.
Should never get here. Why are you here?
you can't be here.
But yeah, with TypeScript, I mean, you don't really debug that much, I guess. It was different before when you're using just JS, but TypeScript, you don't really end up in those where what is happening, you know, as much.
And TypeScript and JSX play well together, do they?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I could ever code back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's an interesting part of the tooling is to think in terms of, I will only do this with these tools together.
Right? Oh, yeah. True.
So is JSX really part of React? It seems like a more generalized, you know, way of describing
JavaScript elements. Right. I'm pretty sure JSX is a React thing, yeah.
Is a React thing, but
yeah, it's defined at react.org.
Yeah. But it does seem like folks really like it. Like, it's kind of everywhere looking around for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Certainly specifically mentioned in the TypeScript docs too, is, you know, do it this way. Okay. So we're happy with this. Is there particular features in React 19 that are important? Because it's been this many years? Like, what were they holding back on?
Well, React 19 is kind of split into this improvement section, which is more for upgrading into and whatever is going to help you with your client-side apps that you already have. And then it's the new features that are primarily for the server side of things, or integrating the server and the client in smooth ways. So that's kind of the trend of 19, I guess. You have improvements, and then you have new features that work really well or are for the server side.
So it seems to me that 19 is really the version where server components grows up. Like it was an add-on in 18, and now it's like, no, this is a corporal to what we're doing. You want to do server-side rendering, you use server component.
Yeah.
And according to the React blog, the biggest feature of React 19 is that it's now stable.
Yeah.
So that's really good.
Yeah. It took a while. It had a bit of, React Conf was in May 2024, mm-hmm. which is like mm-hmm. the release. It was the RC. But then it took until I think December 2024 before it was actually released because of some suspense, behavior changing drama that they were able to fix, in collaboration with the community. So yeah. Mm.
Right. Mm-hmm. What is suspense?
In some ways you only know when you get it out into the world and different devs beat on it and do things to it. And you're like, didn't think of that.
So suspense is a feature of components.
So
you can suspend a component. Is that it?
Yeah. So it's, you're going to suspend, I don't know the exact definition, but you typically use it to suspend something that's not ready yet. So it could be for lazy loading, or with sure. server components, it would be a server component that's not ready yet.
Right. So instead of littering your code with Boolean flags, you know, mm-hmm. loaded now. No, really loaded.
Yeah. Suspense is, and the reason suspense is so great is because it lets you define this fallback property so that you can easily define your skeleton UI, all of that. And it's a great pattern.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And so I guess it was really improved in 19.
Well, it works with server components. It really completes the server component model.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what's the fallback position if the server component doesn't show up? Like, this sounds like a pretty tricky problem.
So, we didn't really talk about server components that much yet, but when you're waiting, I don't know if you want to go back a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
Server components can be async. So when they're not ready, when they're still running on the server, you can't show them, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't deal with that, it would be like this MPA behavior where you can't go to the next page. So what you do is you actually suspend, or you wrap them with suspense, and then you use streaming to stream in those pieces of the tree or that component with a fallback UI.
So is there a concept of pre-rendering?
It depends. In a way, server components are pre-rendered because they're run on the server, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like SSR also, which is also okay. pre-rendering in that sense.
So while it's rendering, you can't access it. So it's suspended while it's rendering.
You would want to suspend it, yes, so that you can see something and the user would not be blocked from going to your page.
Oh, okay. So the fallback is what you're talking about, like a placeholder.
Placeholder, right? Yeah, placeholder.
Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. While you at least show something while you wait to load, or at least say, hey, this isn't, or what if it isn't coming? Like,
right. Nope, there's no button yet.
Yeah.
Or the button is disabled. You gotta wait.
And if you've been on like any good modern app, you'll see lots of skeletons, right? All over. But if they're good, you don't think about them that much, right? It just feels like, oh, okay, I'm just waiting for this. So that's the goal, right? You want it to feel like.
No, it's like a div tag. It's a block that's sort of pulsing because it's waiting for something to load. Like it gives you a visual indicator that something will happen here. It's just not happened yet.
So that's definitely something there.
Yeah, we're definitely playing this game of async all the things so that you're not waiting linearly for each piece and bits can load as needed. Like it is clever. The trick is writing manageable code for that. Like that to me is we want all this asynchronousness. What we don't want is the debug nightmare of why is this not behaving correctly? What happens when it comes in a different order and not having to own any of that problem? Okay, so. And when we talked last time, server components was brand new and you did have some warnings and stuff for us. So things are generally better. Like, what do you see in server components at this point?
When I started using them, server components were ready in that sense. They've been stable since I was on the show last time. However, all of the APIs that make them more manageable and make them work well in apps weren't. Because those kind of came with 19.
Right. Mm.
So that's what's changed. So now you can actually build apps that feel good, not just, you know, janky server components, which was a little bit of the vibe you got before because you didn't really know what to do with them, how to handle them, how you made performant apps, all of these things.
So it was really the UI side needed to catch up with what server components could do for you.
I think so, yeah. And for sure, the Reacting was planning this, but it wasn't really something. I mean, the docs weren't ready. All of you didn't really know what you were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. So what are you supposed to do? Like, what? How do I refactor an existing React app to really take advantage of this? Like, is it a lot of change?
It depends on what you mean by this. If you mean server components, that's not really an easy thing to do. But you can use React 19. That's all good. But if you want to use server components, you need some sort of framework for that.
Okay. So that's where the async UI and the streaming comes in. Does that whole process of suspending, rendering, does that all happen by default, or do you have to say, hey, I want this component, but I want it to be suspended, and then say when it's not suspended? Like, does it just work?
You have to define it, and it is a little bit easy to mess it up if you don't know what to do yet, I would say. For example, in Next.js, which is like the most stable server component framework, you're not really told when something is being awaited and you don't have a fallback the way it is right now. So you need to kind of learn to look for where you're putting your async code and then define your suspense boundaries yourself.
Is there a good reason for that? It seems like plumbing code, but maybe because it doesn't always happen in the same way?
I think it's because, I mean, you could say that there's use cases where you don't want to have a fallback. You want to block the UI before you see something. But what Next.js is doing right now is innovating a lot on this, actually. So they have this new modes that will give you errors when you're not providing fallbacks. So yeah, there's a lot of innovation happening on how to make this developer experience also logical.
Better, yeah. Falling into the pit of success is a good thing.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, we got to watch out for that. But I'm sure the documentation, since it's been redone, is a lot better about explaining how that works.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
At least helping you with trying to do the right things. But it also sounds like you don't just retrofit React components, server components in. You've got to think through the way your site works.
Yeah, and you would migrate to a framework if you're not on one. So if you're in a Create React app. Speaking of, Create React app is deprecated now, by the way, so you shouldn't be using it before, but you should definitely not be using it now.
Can you say what it is again?
So Create React app was...
Create React app.
Create React app. It's app. The... Probably if you've built a React app, that's what you've used for the past years, unless you've been following along and you've been using Vite in the recent time. It was like the first, what do you say? Like
template generator or something?
Template generator, yeah, for React as a framework. And it hasn't been maintained for a long time. And then finally, now that React 19 was released, the community was like, we need you guys to deprecate this because new devs are still going to fall into this trap of using it. And it doesn't even work anymore, you know?
Okay.
That's a
because the whole point with Create React App was like, it's your instant hello world, right? It's really boop, 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 here you go, running. Yep. Now tweak it from here.
Like a Visual Studio template would.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is there an alternative one of those or?
Yes. So for a long time already, you would use Vite, which is like the next generation Vite, V-I-T-E.
Okay.
It's not an intuitive pronunciation.
Okay, vit.dev.
Yeah.
Like Vite, only different?
French for quick.
I think it's French, yep, correct. That's what it is.
Nice.
Is it Vite or is it Vite?
I'm just glancing at the documentation here.
Yeah.
Scaffolding your first Vite project, or Vite.
So maybe Vite.
Maybe Vite, yeah.
I don't think, maybe some people know the proper pronunciation, but...
None of us are French. And being Canadian doesn't count.
Well, it says on the docs that it's on the docs. It says it's pronounced like Vite.
Okay.
Okay. Then my bad.
But it looks. I mean, it's you use NPM, and it looks pretty simple. And then there's some community templates too.
Yeah, it's a really great bundler build tool, and it's created by the Vue.js community, I think. I might be saying some wrong things. Sorry, that's not already, that's not entirely correct here. But it's been like, ever since maybe 2020 already, it's been like the default way you should be creating a React app, but it hasn't been communicated that clearly that this is the way we do it now.
Nice. Yeah, it seems a relationship between Vite and Vue, or Vite and Vue. So there's also Vite and React, which is interesting. Like, you keep wanting to paint these different stacks as rivals, and then they go and collaborate on tooling and using the same thing. It's like, listen, not that big of a rival, really.
So wait, you can use Vite with Vue?
Yeah, and actually, it can be used with like a lot of things. And actually, many of the like newer generation meta frameworks, like React Router V7 has migrated to Vite. So it's already like very big in the framework world.
Wow.
Interesting, yeah. It works with Angular, works with, it seems like a front end to a build system, right? Whatever you want to build. That's really interesting.
Very cool.
I'll make your life easier. Here you go.
So this seems like a good time for a break. We'll be right back after these very important messages. Stick around. You know, .NET 6 has officially reached the end of support, and now is the time to upgrade. .NET 8 is well supported on AWS. Learn more at aws.amazon.com/.net.
Ranked number one in innovation 10 consecutive years, Arizona State University isn't just ahead of the curve. It's creating new paths to success. Learn from notable clinical and research faculty online. That's a degree better. Explore programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
And we're back. It's .NET Rocks. I'm Carl Franklin. That's Richard Campbell.
Hey.
We're talking to our friend Aurora Scharf about React and React server components and Next.js. So what's the difference between Next.js and other frameworks? Major difference in terms of how you use them.
So Next.js is, server components were developed together with Next.js, and Next.js's implementation of them is sort of React's idea of how they're supposed to be used, like architecture.
Okay.
But that's not the only way you can use them. But in server component, Next.js server components are, everything is default server, so it's like server first, right? Which is why it's also like this entirely new mental model for React developers.
Server first, meaning before you do any UI, you create your server and you build out your UI from that.
Yeah, you're starting on the server and you opt in to the client whenever you need client features.
Okay.
Because who wants clients, honestly?
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is I can see like the server first being analogous to like Blazor server, where you have your markup and your code and it all just sort of munges together and goes down to the client. Whereas, you know, the traditional model is you build an HTML file, you have some JavaScript, you call the JavaScript to go to the server to get some data, and then you bring it back into the client. So with the Next.js server first approach, you're basically doing everything from the server. You're not building an HTML file on the client and then going and making calls to a server, right?
Yeah.
The server supplies the markup.
Everything starts from the server, and you will also be fetching your data on the server, and then you rather pass it down if it needs to be available inside something we call client components, right? Which is...
And that's also safe.
Yeah.
Safer, because why are you exposing APIs that require authorization to a client browser?
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. That's not good.
Stop that.
Stop that now. That's not good. But that's how it was done for the longest time, right?
For the longest time, you would always have some sort of API in between your client-side React app because you had to, right?
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was the typical React backend piece you would use before we got to server components?
Well, I work at a consultancy, and we're still a lot of projects are still using this old stack, you could say. It's still relevant, but that would be like React Spa with Vite, and then maybe .NET Web API, something like that. That's like the typical.
Yeah, maybe I was thinking of Remix or.
Well, Remix is also a meta framework, so they can also do their own data fetching if they want to.
Right.
Mm.
Like, it's just like Next is the latest version, but there were other solutions to the Spa approach of React This seems less spa-ish. Like you're basically asking the server to send you markup.
Yeah, and that's why it's a big mental shift, because it is way less spa-ish. It's more. Yeah, it's server first. It's not really a spa until you make it a spa.
Right.
To me, it's analogous to Blazor Server. You know, where the server just generates everything, the markup, the data, everything. So there's no, you know, code that needs to run in the browser per se, unless there's something specific that you have to run.
Because one of the things we liked about spas was then you could have pieces of the page being reloaded inside of a div and so forth. And I presume you can still do that. It's just the original spa idea says, I'm going to download a bunch of UI goop to the client that then has the code to call to different APIs to populate bits on the page. Now you're saying just fetch it from the server. Server will render give it what we need to render with. And that might include asynchronous pieces to be loaded as well.
Yep.
Yeah, that seems really cool.
I mean, I come at this from a scaling perspective, so I'm trying to figure out what's more resource intensive, the server, recognizing, what's the server capable of. Although it's a cloud world now, like that almost means that, scaling means a different thing today.
It's a button to push, a slider.
It's a slider.
So when you're doing it on the server, at least, I mean, you don't have to, as you're saying, download the code to fetch the API and go all the way back to, communicate with the API, give it back. You're skipping this long travel, I guess, because you're already just on the
server. Yeah, the first page load on a spa sucks.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's always the battle. The later ones, because you've got stuff cached, get better, but... We got to a point with some of our sites where we're literally doing a flat rendered page that then backloaded the spa in just so that your first page was quick. But it was literally an orphan page. Like it was completely different than everything else on the site because it was all about get that landing page loaded fast so people have a good experience.
Yeah, it's the pre-rendering thing.
That's a very convoluted way of thinking. But I could see the IT guy in me. My brain is immediately going to, what's that going to mean for server resources? It doesn't matter. I can just light up more functions.
So do you know how much memory per client is used in React server components?
I don't know that, but I do know that when you're using the server, actually, it doesn't have to be like the server that you're doing your dynamic stuff. It can also be in the build. So whatever resources that you're talking about here would be for your dynamic data, right? So if you have some sort of static stuff that you don't need, so the things that make it dynamic would be like request headers or params or cookies, all of that stuff. If a component doesn't use it, it doesn't need to be rendered on the server. It can be in the build.
Data that's, based on who the client is, right?
Yeah, correct. Exactly.
Yeah, what we would call state.
Stateful stuff.
User state.
All right. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. What does this deploy like? What am I setting up on the back end here? Is this a set of functions in Azure, or is it has to come out in container sets? Like, what's the back end to deploy look like?
Previously I tried it with app service, but right now our deployment is Node.js Docker image and then containerize the application. That works great. I think anything, pretty much anything, and this is actually a misconception that a lot of people think that you have to use Vercel, and you don't. And the Libra Robin.
You have to use
Vercel, which is the
Vercel,
the creator of Next.js, right?
Right.
Oh, I see. So you can run it on Amazon. You can run it in containers. You can run it anywhere.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no reason. In the end, you just need something that can run Node.
Right.
And it turns out just about everything can run Node.
Yeah.
So yeah, you could easily run this in a container.
Is that the only misconception people might have about React 19 and React Server Components?
That's definitely a big one. Usually when I'm talking to people, sometimes they would say like, what? You're deploying Next.js on Azure? How are you doing that? I didn't think that's possible. So that's a big one. And maybe another big one is about the compiler. So it's been like a big thing that React compiler, which is a whole other thing, is in React 19. It's in beta.
So there was no compiler before 19?
No, compiler is new.
Because it's a server thing.
It's a separate project. It's not actually, it's a client thing.
Really?
Yeah. It's like this whole other thing that has not really that much to do with server components.
Interesting. So this is separate from the JavaScript engine in the browser? What do we need a compiler on the client for?
So in React, right, you're doing a lot of re-renders. And React doesn't use signals like some of the other frameworks, like Angular's got signals now, right, and SolidJS. So you're doing the necessary re-renders, and the compiler is kind of here to fix that for you so that your code is memoized automatically.
Okay, so is it analogous to just taking messages that are like, you know, upload this div with this content, or, you know, change this list of stuff to this, just in specific components on the page?
It will, I'm actually not an expert on the compiler. I just know it's a common misconception, but it will do your use memo, use callback stuff. Kind of, it's a different way of doing it, but it will substitute whatever extra code you would add to add memoization for you, so you don't have to add it.
Okay.
So skipping unnecessary re-renders and caching or memoizing heavy computations.
Is there still work to do on React server components? Is there still stuff on your wish list?
Well, there is a lot of things happening actually still, because again, the Next.js implementation is one approach. You have other frameworks that have kind of been emerging recently with their own thoughts on how to deal with server components. So maybe you know, well, you know Remix, right? You said Remix.
Yep.
Remix has now been, or I guess renamed or been migrated to React Router v7. Or have you heard of that yet?
Mm-mm. React what? 7?
React Router v7.
Router v7.
So React Router is like the biggest React library, right? And Remix is built on top of it. Same creator. Now it's been merged. This is a pretty big deal, actually, for those millions of React apps out there.
So Remix became React Router v7. Is that what happened?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Everything you love about Remix back into React Router proper. So they're encouraging all Remix v2 users to upgrade to React Router v7.
Yeah.
It says, for the majority of the React ecosystem that has been around for the last 10 years, we believe React Router v7 will be the smoothest way to bridge the gap between React 18 and 19. Well, that's interesting. So if you have React 18 with Remix and you want to move to 19, using React Router v7 is the way to go.
Yep. And also going from React Router v6 and kind of incrementally adopting a Meta Frameworks features, which is amazing because that's not always so easy as with if you were to do it with the Next.js App Router. It's not like that. So it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like it.
Yeah. And definitely feels like the ecosystem trying to consolidate into a few more standard approaches. I grabbed a link off of Microsoft Learn about running Next.js and Azure Static Web Apps. And it reminds me of things like making WordPress run on Windows. Like, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
I actually encountered someone who had been doing that, and don't do that. I think they've done this. I don't know this, but I think that they have this docs on it, but it's not supposed to really be done this way.
Yeah.
I just remember the same person who tried it, and it was just not something you should.
But what is the, like you said, is the typical React deploy with Vercel? Because that's the end-to-end sort of, we know it works, all the docs exist, like that's easier. What are the all sort of known good alternatives that you're going to get decent support for?
Alternative for Vercel? Or?
Yeah.
There's a lot. I know a lot of people deploy on Netlify, Cloudflare, right?
Right.
And AWS, Azure. But at least for your own projects, Vercel is just so smooth, right?
Right.
So the experience is smoother just because they own the whole stack. Is that the idea?
Yeah. But they also support other frameworks, by the way, not just Next.js.
But in you're dealing with a customer and they are primarily an Azure tenant. You want to run this in Azure. It sounds like the way to go is containers, is Docker.
That's what we do.
That's the well-documented strategy deploying React. I mean, Node runs in Azure Functions. I just don't know that I'd want to try and implement it this way because it is kind of odd, right? Like, you're going to be by yourself if you do this.
Yeah.
So just trying to get, you know, there's always these peripheral, well, you could do that, But you'd be all alone if you did.
So again, when I asked you what's on your wish list, you said what they were doing. That's really great. So what's on your actual wish list?
Well, actually, I got kind of derailed here, but what I was going to say was that Retro V7 is also getting server components in a whole different way.
Is that a good thing?
It depends if you don't like the server first approach.
Right.
Yeah, there's another one, Tenstack Start is thinking of server components. So basically things are happening, right, in different approaches, not just the server first approach.
Okay, so I guess this was on your wish list and now it's happening.
I already worked with the app router for such a long time. I like it,
yeah.
But I would be happy that there's other ways to do it as well.
Other ways to do it.
So we call this the router first approach versus the server first approach?
It's more like a client first, I guess, but you can return server components from loaders.
Right.
Which is kind of, yeah.
So you return server components and then run them in the client?
It's like returning data, but you're actually returning a component.
So it's returning the markup.
Yeah.
All right.
In a way.
So the router invokes the server component to write it to.
In a way, yeah.
It doesn't have the code behind it, but just the markup. That's the result of running the code. Got it.
So you are sort of client first in a sense. You're loading a router that then invokes different server components that send down the markup that renders the page.
So that's different.
So it's a middleman. And I guess that's why the, you know, moving from 18 to 19 is going to be easier with that, because you've already got client-centric code calling into the server. So, you know, you're just changing in the middleman.
So I guess if you were to answer the question, how do you opt into server components, probably the path would be go from your client-side app to React Router V7, enable the meta framework features, wait for server components, return server components. That's kind of the incremental way there, if you're not going to go for an issues app router.
It strikes me the Next.js server components approach is a greenfield approach. It's a rethink.
Yeah, greenfield.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, where this is much more brownfield, get some of those capabilities. Your existing stuff keeps working. You're bridging. Yeah, that's fair.
That's why it's a big deal.
Very good.
Definitely make your life a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah.
Has productivity gone up with V19 for you?
For me, yeah, because I know how to use this stuff. I think if you didn't catch up to 19, it's hard to see why you would need the new hooks, because some of them are useful for client, but a lot of them are for like server. They're documented in the Next.js docs, for example, in a certain way. There's not enough examples for the client, something like that. So I'm definitely productive. I see the uses for all the new stuff. And also some of the new features, like this use hook is for server components, and a cache API is for server components. So there's things that I'm using a lot to improve my performance of that building.
Well, that's great.
Is
there anything we haven't covered that you want to talk about?
Let me have a look here. Maybe like a RSC 1 year later. So this was kind of, I'm still using it. It still works for me, you know?
Okay.
But actually the State of React 2024 survey says that 60% still didn't try it of the response, still didn't try server components.
Interesting.
And that's very interesting.
Client-side programmers like their client-side.
And it's hard to get into, right? Because you cannot just opt in.
Right.
And also some of the people that did try it, or 20% found it to be a pain point of the new APIs. So it's still not, you know, doesn't still have a very positive, what can you say, vibe around it.
Do you think it's the async side of things? Like, it's just hard to think that way if you're not used to it?
I think it's a big mental shift. It's a learning curve, and you have to kind of do it on your free time if you don't use it at work. So it's a very big jump.
Yeah, I was going to say there's probably less incentive for somebody who's maintaining or working on a project at a company that isn't planning to move to server-side components, because it's a big rewrite.
Yep.
Well, and no customer asks for this, right? Like, this is not a customer. It's like, oh, I wish we had server components. They don't care.
Right, exactly. But a consultant you know, who's got multiple clients and is waiting for the next client to come along and say, we need a website. What are we going to do? That's when you want to whip out the 19 server components.
Yeah, because if you have like this new project, a lot of apps are just, okay, let's pick Next.js. And some companies even have that as their default app stack, right? So it's inevitable that at some point you're probably going to encounter it if your work is using it, right? And there's lots of big apps like PayPal, New York Public Library, and we have this huge e-commerce in our electronics sales, what do you say, company in the Nordics called Elkjøp, which is like all on AppRouter and Vercel. And it's a big success story.
Right. But it's also not something you moved anywhere easily. Much less why. Like, what is the business case here? Is it, I want a faster website? I want it more maintainable? Like, what's the thing the customer's going to want? They're going to like, I'm really glad we made that move.
So e-commerce is, I mean, speed, performance. That's always been Vercel's focus or Next.js focus. That's what they're always optimizing for.
Yeah. So all that psychosis we've always had about time to first byte, like how quickly can you get the page in front of people so that they don't switch away, everything stays snappy. And async is better for that because you don't get hung up on the realities of the internet where some packet gets lost and the whole page is stalled. Oh, I appreciate that. But that's the customer request is, can we make it faster? And it's like, yeah, we can re-engineer it this way.
Yeah, making it fast, definitely. That's a easy pick.
Yeah, it's just a question of whether it's true. Like the great thing about doing a refactor like this is you'll leave us alone for 3 months. It's going to take a while.
Yeah, I think it took like, I don't know, many months for the Elkjøp rewrite. That was from Angular, actually. So it was like the biggest.
Big haul.
Jeez. So they rewrote Angular.
Angular to Next? Woo. There's a case study for you.
Yeah, Angular to Next. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, oh boy. Yeah, that is a big jump.
Do the Vue developers throw stones at you?
They have their own thing. I think Vue developers seem pretty happy with Vue.
Yeah.
That's my impression.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We like to stir up hate and discontent where it doesn't exist. So.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Everybody has pain, right?
I can tell you the Vue developers were very unhappy when the React team deprecated Create React App and did not mention Vit as the primary way to replace it. But the community changed that. So you had some new developers who were a part of that.
Did they have a different idea of where to go besides Vit?
I mean, for a long time, the docs have said Next or frameworks. They've been encouraging frameworks and they still do. Right. Yeah, that's just the thing. They encourage frameworks. They think that you should use a framework unless you, for some reason, decide not to, but that shouldn't be the default. The default should be a framework. That's what the docs lead you to.
Right. So, and actually most people like, no, actually Vite's an easier way to go. It gets me up and running.
In a lot of cases, it could be, yeah. And that's the reason for the community pushback.
That's interesting.
So React is a Facebook/Meta thing. Is there any indication that they have moved everything over to 19 or they're going to? I mean, I can't imagine going from, you know, a previous model to that, as you know, as big as Facebook is.
I don't know about that exactly, if they're using it, but I do know that they're using the compiler in their internal apps like Instagram. So that's, I guess, a bigger, better metric for what they're actually building that they're using for themselves.
Yeah.
Well, and that's always been the claim to fame, right? This is how we build Facebook, so you can use it too.
Right. If we can, if Facebook doesn't crash, your app won't, right?
What was that great story where they locked themselves out of their own data center with some security? It's a sysadmin story about literally they had to take an angle grinder to a door to get into a data center because somebody had shut down a key account that didn't allow, that took out the door controls.
Oh my.
Fun stories in the hardware side.
Well, I guess the door controls weren't that good if you could take a sawzall to it and cut it out.
Apparently it took a whole day, so I think it was pretty good. Like everything will eventually fail if you try hard enough. But then
I guess you're right. Yeah.
For a part there, it's like we can't get into the data center both digitally or physically. Okay. Yeah, this looks like a big important version. Like you said, 4 years coming. That's a long time in our world.
Yep. There's stuff for everyone. If you didn't like check it out yet, you should, especially the improvement section. Even if you're in a client-side app, there's like a lot of things there that you might need. like preloading CSS or other resources, and there's like async script support with priority hydration error improvements for those of us who have experienced that, so you can actually see what is happening.
Nice.
There's a lot. Error handling, yeah. There's a lot of like improvements that actually matter for you, even though you're not using server components.
That's good. Well, I imagine our listeners will have more questions than we do, since we're not daily React users. But so this would be great, you know, to leave a comment on the website, and you know, if you have any questions for Aurora. Yeah.
And where can folks find you, Aurora?
X is good. I'm still there. I works for me to communicate with people there. And I have a blog if you want to like read stuff, but for communicating, probably X or Twitter.
Awesome.
Very good. Well, thanks. It's been great talking to you again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
All right. And we'll talk to you next time on .NET Rocks.
.NET Rocks is brought to you by Franklin's Net and produced by Plop Studios, a full-service audio, video, and post-production facility located physically in New London, Connecticut, and of course in the cloud. Online at pwop.com. Visit our website at dotnetrocks.com for RSS feeds, downloads, mobile apps, comments, and access to the full archives going back to show number one, recorded in September 2002. And make sure you check out our sponsors. They keep us in business. Now go write some code. See you next time.
Ranked number one in innovation 10 consecutive years, Arizona State University isn't just ahead of the curve. It's creating new paths to success. Learn from notable clinical and research faculty online. That's a degree better. Explore programs at asuonline.asu.edu. At Arizona State University, we're bringing world-class education from our globally acclaimed faculty to you. Ranked number one in innovation for 10 consecutive years and number two among public universities for employability, ASU isn't just ahead of the curve. It's creating new paths to success. Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university. Online, that's a degree better. Explore more than 300 undergraduate, graduate, and certificate programs at asuonline.asu.edu.